Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening from Fort Lauderdale. This is Nate Klarfeld with Stonewall Live, the best of gay and lesbian book, film, and media talk on Blog Talk Radio. Tonight I have Robert Levitan, author, designer, segment writer, and we're going to talk about his new book, The New 60, Outliving Yourself and Reinventing a Future, available on Amazon.com. Good evening, Robert.
Hello, Nate.
How is New York this evening?
New York is absolutely beautiful this evening. You know, it's a great time of year here. It's a time to be alive. It's a time to be in love. It's a time to get things going. So, yes, I love New York this time of year.
Great. That sounds great. You sound really happy tonight. Let's go right into the book, The New 60, Outliving Yourself and Reinventing a Future. How did this book come about?
Well, the book came out of a column that I wrote called The New 60 on Advocate.com and the Good Men Project. And I started it when I turned 59. And a couple of months before that, I was sitting by the river with my then partner, and we were talking about projects and what's next. And I suggested that he write a book called The New 50, talking about being a professional athlete and turning 50, which was coming up in the next year for him. And I suddenly went, hold it, this is what I need to do, The New 60. So I decided to explore what does it mean to turn 60 from my perspective, and that's colored by the fact that I've been HIV positive for 30 years, and the idea of reaching 60 was once almost inconceivable.
Hmm. Okay, so I did actually start reading your column probably about 2 years ago, year and a half ago, and
yeah.
Really followed it because I had just turned 60 when I saw your column the first time. I actually reached out to you when I found that. It was amazing. So tell us what was the most dramatic thing that happened when you hit the big 6-0?
The most dramatic thing is that nothing happened.
Uh-huh. That's exactly.
it's all a construct.
Uh-huh.
And so the truth is that I find that, you know, whenever I approach a decade, and I'm a psychotherapist as well as a writer and group leader, workshop leader, so I've worked with lots of people on aging issues, and I find that we build up all these ideas, and we have all these things in our file about aging, and they usually show up before big numbers, and then when the day comes, it's usually like, oh, well, you know,
yeah.
It's just another day. But one of the reasons I wrote the book was because I'm writing for my own demographic, but I'm also writing for younger men and women, you know, that I don't want them to be afraid of getting older. I want them to know that I have this rather, you know, pleasant surprise, not 100% surprise, that, you know, as I approach 60, now I'm 61, that I'm at the top of my game, I'm having so much fun,
mm-hmm.
and that I want to make sure that people aren't afraid of aging, because there's this idea of a shelf life.
Right,
and I certainly don't want people to feel that, you know, when they turn 40 it's over, or 50 it's over, or 60 or 70 or 80, that we're reinventing aging.
Right, exactly. And, you know, just from your voice, hearing your voice, you know, physically right now, and also listening to your voice and reading your book, you're a very positive, upbeat, sparkling kind of guy, not the stereotypical, cynical, old bitchy queen at 60, which we see a lot of.
I think there are a lot of people like me and you, and it's important that get out there. Now, the very first column I wrote on Advocate, introducing myself and this whole concept, I got a really interesting response, including a major attack from Larry Kramer,
uh-huh.
saying, how dare you say you're speaking for HIV-positive men and, you know, over 60, that we're living lives of quiet desperation and we're miserable. And, you know, I said, I'm not speaking for anyone except myself. There, I'm saying I exist and other people like me do exist. So you can be bitter and sad. And I think Larry Kramer is brilliant, and I honor him for the work he has done. And he and I are different ends of the spectrum. He holds the darkness, I hold the light.
Exactly.
There's room for both of us.
Oh, and I hope so. Great.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, that's good. I do, you know, I do agree with you that there is life after HIV. I myself am also HIV positive. I'm over 60 years old. I don't feel it. I don't look it. I have never felt better in my life. Probably similar. And you say the exact things in your book. I do want to talk about ageism in the gay community on both spectrums. As a psychotherapist, what is the problem that we have with ageism?
Well, there's two aspects of ageism. Ageism exists in the culture, but what is most insidious, and what I've been doing a fair amount of work now and in workshops and other contexts, is internalized ageism, internalized prejudice, where we're actually consciously or unconsciously buying into that we are less than because of how old we are, if we're talking about internalized ageism.
Mm-hmm.
That people start, and the simplest way you know is when you start lying about your age.
Uh-huh.
If you're lying about your age, you're saying your real age isn't as good.
Right, exactly.
And so I am on this, you know, campaign. I'm not the one. I'm not alone, so I can't say it's a one-man campaign. But I'm encouraging people to start telling the truth about their age. When someone says you don't look 61 or you don't look 62, the answer is, to paraphrase Gloria Steinem, is no. This is what 61 looks like.
Right, right.
Or at least this is what 61 can look like.
Right, right.
Because if I tell people I'm 52. In order to get, you know, more dates or do something or I don't know what it is, then what I'm doing is I'm dishonoring the 61 that I am.
Right.
I'm not giving it its face and its visibility.
In fact, in the book, you talk about meeting someone online that lied about his age and some other things. And you want to talk about that?
Yes, I think that was a chapter that's titled "Men Come with Warning Labels."
With warning labels, I have it in front of me. And you end up talking about your father.
Yes. So, well, I grew up in, you know, around a lot of untruths and little white lies that were generally about, you know, protecting people from suffering. But the idea of lying about one's age, yes, I suddenly looked at this man who I had met in a yoga class, and he was just a terrific guy, really liked him. And then I suddenly started adding up after our first date that he had his age online, even though I met him in yoga, I also saw him online, and was different. You know, he made himself younger. That he'd been married and led a double life for years, that he had not told his teenage child about his sexuality. And I was suddenly going, this is not someone who tells the truth easily.
Right.
Now, I can have compassion and sympathy and understanding for why it's hard for him to do those things. However, my belief is that's a warning label. If I were to get into a relationship with him, it's going to show up in our relationship where he's not going to reveal things to me because it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm. I
don't want that to happen.
Oh, I know. It's like I think my grandmother once told me that everybody tells you everything about themselves in the first 5 minutes, but you're not listening.
That's exactly it. That's it. That's another way of saying they all come in warning labels.
Right.
Yes.
I think we don't listen on purpose because I call it, and my listeners are used to it, I call it magical thinking. Gay men have an amazing way of doing magical thinking.
We're very good at it, but we're not alone. You know, one of the things I've noticed is my readership, a lot of women, you know, read my columns and my book and say, this is about me just as much. And some straight men.
Okay.
Women particularly, you know, because women are dealing also with the same. I think the ageism, the issue of shelf life is very much about women in our culture, and gay men have a similar thing. The idea of I'm a sexual object and I'm going to lose my value.
Okay. You're exactly right. Listen, I want to take a little plug right here. The book is called The New 60, Outliving Yourself and Reinventing a Future by Robert Levitan, Levitan. It's available on Amazon.com, both in print and Kindle version. And I am going to read a very short paragraph that I not only have highlighted, but I've typed up and stuck on the wall. So it's easy to read. Accepting the aging process is key. A little vanity pushes us to care for ourselves. A lot of vanity usually takes away enjoyment of who we are at our core. This is a practice for most of us, considering the pressure to be, quote, young, unquote, in our culture. I pray that I can embrace this process and enjoy what I have at each stage fully and move on with some measure of grace. That really hit me.
It's beautiful.
It is. Thank you.
It's always startling to hear one's own words read back or quoted back to one. I do believe in what that says. I think that it's true. And it is, again, it's something to strive for. It's practice. I think practice is the great word. So it's to practice appreciation of self, practice compassion for oneself, a practice mindfulness about when I'm being caught in old beliefs and societal beliefs that don't match my own well-being.
What are some of the societal beliefs that don't match our well-being for a gay man getting older? What are some of the societal
beliefs? Well, I think the first one is, well, of course, I in the book, I've had people say to me, a lot of times, things I'm doing, people will say to me, well, you know, men your age don't.
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, men your age don't have that much sex, or men your age don't ride Segways, men your age don't wear that, men your age don't, and then they're false statements because I'm doing them.
Correct. So just the fact that you're doing it means they're 100% wrong. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Their statement has been invalidated by the fact that I exist.
Right,
and that's one of the reasons why I've been out as an HIV positive man for years and public about it, because I'm a long-term survivor and I'm very fortunate. I went all the way to AIDS and I came back without damage. There are not that many people who can say that. There are certainly a certain number, and it's important that people know that we exist.
Right,
and to know that possibility exists. When someone's newly HIV positive and comes to me for counseling. People say, well, there's lots of people who are living a long time. A lot of times, it's nice to hear that, but when I'm talking to them, they can't tell me it's not true because they can't tell me I don't exist.
That's correct. Actually, I'm a 20-year survivor. I was in AIDS, full-blown AIDS, and here I am. And I recently took up karate, and now I'm a red belt, and I've been hearing that constantly, that I am too old for this, but...
Yes, I do anti-gravity aerial yoga, which is amazing, and I'm doing all this stuff that I couldn't do when I was in my 20s, and I can do it now. So I love the idea of letting go of the idea of what I can and cannot do.
Tell me about
I have to acknowledge the yoga.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I
wanted to hear about the aerial yoga more.
Okay, well, actually, it's related to it because anti-gravity yoga was created by Christopher Harrison, who was my partner for 5 years. And and when I met Christopher, he helped me to see that I had started to buy into some of the ideas about I'm too old for things.
Mm-hmm.
I am now almost 10 years older than I was when I met him, and I'm doing things now that I thought then I couldn't do because I was too old.
Right.
Like hang upside down and do all sorts of aerial... you know, arts things on a hammock in yoga and Pilates, and it's just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, aerial yoga, anti-gravity yoga, is using a silk hammock so that you can support yourself. You can do inversions without any stress on your body or compression. You can use it to do all sorts of yoga moves, and it's a fusion technique. It's fantastic.
Uh-huh. Good. Yeah,
I have no enthusiasm about this.
I saw that, and I see pictures of you in your anti-gravity yoga somewhere. I'm searching the web. It is really amazing. I do have another quote that I have to read. Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
It's from the chapter called "The Normal Heart." Society's prejudices are everywhere. We absorb them, and subtly or not so subtly, we build up belief systems about ourselves based on what we are exposed to and experience. Sadly, we often buy into the idea that we are less than because of something we are. Prejudice can be truly insidious, and the good news is we have a great deal of influence on its healing, since it's about a change in our own perceptions, not about changing others.
Whoa. Well, this is internalized prejudice we're talking about.
Right, exactly.
Earlier, yes.
Yeah, it is. It is just absolutely amazing, and how we live with that day to day. And I'm sure in your psychotherapy practice, you see that constantly. And so how do you deal with a client or a patient that has some really really deep internalized prejudices?
Well, the first thing is to help them to notice it, because when we bring it up to consciousness, it's already changing.
Mm-hmm.
If someone says, I had someone tonight say to me, I think I have some more issues about being HIV positive than I realized, because I've noticed that I don't reveal it to a lot of people without any reason for not revealing it.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said in dating, he's never had a bad experience when he's told someone he's positive, yet he's always so anxious before he does. And
mm-hmm.
so he said, wow, this is really... Well, the fact that he's noticing it means it's already changing.
Okay, so...
He's already out of the box, and he's on his way. I encourage him to experiment with doing things differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens over time.
Yeah, disclosure... I can tell you personally from my own experience, the disclosure was the most difficult thing to finally overcome. And in my case, and this is something that I started to do 15 years ago, which was one of my prejudices that I had, was that I only dated other HIV positive men, and which is again, you know, a very negative thing, because it doesn't bother that many people anymore. But I ended up...
Well, Christopher, you know, who I mentioned, is negative. So my last partner of 5 years was negative.
Uh-huh. You know? Right.
I think that there are a lot of people who... And one of the things he said to me, though, was he said, you're so okay with it, I'm okay with it.
Okay.
And
yeah.
So people react to how we hold something. So if we're operating out of internalized prejudice, if we're saying, you know, I'm less than because I'm 60 years old, or I'm less than because I'm HIV positive, or I'm less than because of, you know, whatever the list is, and if we present ourselves as, well, you know, you're not going to want to date me because I'm this,
uh-huh. Then you won't.
Most people will be convinced.
Right, exactly.
You know, it's not very sexy to be told by someone they're not attractive.
Oh, or if you tell tell the other person you're not attractive, that's another another downer.
Yeah.
It's like the old saying, if you think you can or you think you can't, you're probably right.
Yes, yes. And so most people are going to agree with you if you say, you know, I'm damaged goods, they'll buy it. If you
right.
present yourself as I'm terrific and I happen to be 60 years old, or I happen to be HIV positive, and are you ready, you know, we can deal with this.
Right.
A lot of people are going to go, okay, we'll deal with it.
Well, if you can deal with it, you know, in other words, if you can deal with being 60 and having an active, exciting, magical life, then why wouldn't somebody want to join in?
Well, I'm dealing with that right now. I've been seeing someone who's much younger than me, and we HIV, he'd never dated anyone with HIV positive, and I said, you know, we don't have to date, and then we just find that here we are, we're dating. And
go ahead.
You know, because it's just the idea of letting things happen,
uh-huh.
and getting
sure.
out of the ideas about what you know it's supposed to look like, and live
right.
what it is.
Let's talk about differences in age in dating or relationships. You spend a lot of time kind of sprinkled all through the book that you have dated men older than you at some point in your life and younger than you, and sometimes one or two or three at the same time. And tell me about your feelings on the age spread. Is there one?
Well, I think that age is a factor, but it's only one factor. And I also think that multi-generational friendships and relationships of all kinds are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I can appreciate younger men who want to date me because when I was younger, I dated older men at times. I've also
mm-hmm.
dated men my own age.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, everything has its pluses and minuses. And, you know, there are times when I find myself, when I'm dating someone significantly younger than me, I feel like a mentor. I do
mm-hmm.
feel a bit paternal at certain moments or avuncular.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all right with me at times, but I don't
mm-hmm.
necessarily want that to be the nature of of my relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so ideally I'd like someone who's closer to me in life experience, but that
mm-hmm.
I can't put a number on that.
Uh-huh.
Because there are immature 50-year-olds and there are very mature 30-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what are some of the advantages of dating someone younger, other than the mentor? What are some of the advantages?
Well, their vitality, their,
yes,
you know, the excitement, I'm able to be in touch with that part of myself which I know, which sometimes I'm not around it. You know, it's the contact high of the
mm-hmm.
enthusiasm and excitement about what's happening and discovering new things. And also to be able to be an elder. You know, I'm
mm-hmm.
an AIDS elder. I'm an arts elder.
Mm-hmm.
I've lived through a lot of things, and it's fun to have the opportunity to share my experiences and story because it helps me to understand myself and my life.
Uh-huh. I have a caller. Let's see. Caller 917, you're on the air. What do you want to talk about?
Hi, I'm Robin, and I know Robert, and I love Robert. Hi, Robert. I love your book. And, you know, I was listening to you, and I was just, I have to say, I don't think that there are too many people in my life that I have learned more from and who I admire more than you. And I, you know, not only are you an amazing person and amazing, you know, just a wise man, you're also a beautiful writer, too. But how did you get this way? I mean, like, I'm really curious because you're so compassionate and so wise, and I'm curious, how did it happen? Were you born this way?
Well, I think I've probably always been curious, so I will say that. And I always thought that there was more to the world and life than the life I was surrounded by as a child. I felt something of an alien, so I always thought there's more out there, and I've got to find it. So I guess there was always a sense of being a seeker, and I was interested in what living, traveling, meeting people, making art, doing something. And my family has, you know, is touched upon in this book, but it will be much more touched upon in the memoir I'm working on, is they're crazy, wonderfully crazy, but optimistically crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I grew up with the idea that you can survive anything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And life has given me wonderful teachings because I've had challenges. Growing up in the 50s and 60s as a gay child in a jock family, that was a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
To be an artist in a world where people didn't say, you know, said you shouldn't be an artist, that was a challenge. To be, always feel like an outsider and different. And then I arrived in the avant-garde arts world of New York where I was no longer an outsider. Everyone was an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
So we were now insiders. And so I got to see that our tribes exist. So we have to find our tribe or tribes. And that's part of it. And then life gave me the challenges of AIDS and, deaths in my family. My family has experienced murder, overdose, a lot of things.
Wow.
And they've been profoundly broken my heart, and they have also opened my heart.
Yeah.
Robin, can I ask you a question?
I just want to say one more thing.
Robin, how has Robert changed your life? You kind of touched on it, but you didn't really give any specifics. You don't have to, but we'd love to hear them.
I mean, you know, essentially, I went through a number of losses all at once, and I started going to Friends Indeed, where Robert, you know, leads groups, and
mm-hmm.
I just was able to kind of work through all the pain, and I just learned so much listening to Robert and Cy and Cynthia, three people who are there and who lead, and, you know, just got so much love and so much support, and also knowing that Robert has been through so much, and I too come from kind of a crazy family and have had, you know, a number of issues as a child, but I do, you know, I think that the reason I love him so much is that I feel connected in that way, that I too am 61 and have never felt better in my life.
Great.
And have that kind of optimism. So I totally agree with you, Robert. It really is possible.
Great. Great. Robin,
and you're
thank you.
Proof of it, too. Thank you, Robin.
We all are.
Thank
you.
You
so much for calling, Robin. Take care.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Okay,
thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Robin.
That was great. That was great. All right, here's a tough question. It came from our chat room. Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay, good. What is the first step in reinventing yourself?
Well, I would say it's curiosity. You know, I used that, we've mentioned that before.
Mm-hmm.
But curiosity, when we're curious, our resources are available. We can find out things. And so it's about accepting, also it's about acceptance, accepting
mm-hmm.
where I am and what is happening. Because if we're saying this isn't it,
mm-hmm.
you know, being 60 isn't it, or being HIV positive isn't it, or being divorced isn't it, or having cancer isn't it, then there's nothing we can do. We can only reinvent ourselves if we are where we are. So it's
mm-hmm.
like, oh, so here I am, this is what I have to work with, and
mm-hmm.
let me step forward. There's a wonderful sentence that comes from the Mastery Workshop that Sally Fisher, one of my colleagues, created, and she says that the quality of life is not determined by the circumstances.
Mm-hmm. I've got that right in front of me.
That's really important for reinvention, to realize that it's what you do with what you have is going to determine the quality of your life and who and what your life looks like, not necessarily what's happened to you.
Mm-hmm. Right. And if you get the book, which I want you all to buy the book, available on Amazon.com, The New 60, Outliving Yourself and Reinventing a Future by Robert Levitan, Levitan. I'm a great pimp here, aren't I?
You're doing great.
Okay, thank
God's
you.
God's work. Buy my book.
There, that is. On page 70, opposite page 77, there's a picture of Robert taken by, I believe it's a former lover of yours. Is that right, Peter?
Yes, Peter Hujar. Yes.
Hujar was and it's this is you at 26, and you're bending over, and you cannot touch the floor. And, of course, today you are touching
today
the floor.
Today I can palm the floor.
You can palm the floor and make a pretzel out of yourself. So there's all right.
There's hope.
There is hope.
It's a beautiful picture of me when I'm 26. Most people don't realize that I'm not on my way down. That's actually me hit as far as I can go.
Oh, that is so fun. Okay. Well, it does say that in the book. Want to talk a little bit about sex, because, you know, it's a Thursday night. We can talk sex. We got 3 minutes to go. You talk about monogamy or the lack of it in the gay community or for any men in general. Would you like to talk a little expound on that one for me?
Well, I think that monogamy works for some people. However, I think that the idea that monogamy is the right way to do a relationship, I don't think there's any right way to have a relationship. I think men basically by nature are probably don't tend to be monogamous, and I do know some very monogamous men. And just like all, you know, some people say that biologically women are tend more towards monogamy, and I know women who are non-monogamous, I know women who are.
Right.
think it's important to honor who we are and also where we are in our life, because we can change.
Right.
I think it's really interesting to explore being only with one person
mm-hmm.
as an exploration. I just don't think it's interesting as deprivation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to give up what I want for you. No, actually what I'm going to do is choose to only be with you because that's
right.
really interesting, and I want to find out what that will mean for us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That part was very interesting because this is something that I live with. My partner and I do make the choice to be monogamous for 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider it a gift. I consider it we have created this zone of intimacy that only we have. And so it's not a depriving thing. It's kind of like a jewel that we hold on to.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, then that makes sense, and it works for you.
Right. Of course, we didn't start this relationship till we were 52 and had been in numerous relationships. So it was. I didn't want to talk about me anyway. Last 1 minute, what would you say to a young man that was about to write a book or embark on the publishing world? What are your final words on that?
Do it. Do it for yourself. Do it to have the experience. And if you can't get a book deal, publish it yourself.
Right. That's what we say. And things have changed, haven't they, in publishing?
They certainly have. And, you know, it's wide open.
Right.
It's Wild West now. So lots of things are possible.
Okay, Robert, this has been the most fun I've had in a long time. I want to go do another plug. The New 60, Outliving Yourself and Reinventing a Future by Robert Levitan, available on Amazon.com. A great gift. It's a perfect time of year to start things over. Autumn is an exciting and energizing. Good night.
Good night. Well, thank you, Nate. I'm happy to be here. I'm glad that you're doing this program on books. And I love having the opportunity to share my work, and I look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you, and good night.
All right, good night.